You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and just in time for the holiday ads to start blasting you with must-haves, here's a chat about how having less stuff might make your life more of a blast. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl, winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay-writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate Sharpwriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book, my first freaking real life. Will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book, Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100 plus plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. PartyInYourPlants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's PartyInYourPlants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP because it gets all the thumbs ups. This week on the pod is all about less stuff, more adventure, more freedom, and the most fun chat with Miranda Anderson. In case you missed it, I had a major move last year where Jesse, Tommy, and I carted our stuff away from our tiny apartment in Brooklyn and into an amazing home in the woods where plants grace my presence the minute I walk out the front door or the back door or any window. Behind the scenes of my whole transition was Miranda Anderson, established blogger and author of More Than Enough, How One Family Cultivated a More Abundant Life Through a Year of Practical Minimalism, whose book I listened to on repeat at least 3 times during our move. In this talk, we discussed how your stuff is holding you back from adventure, why practical minimalism is bound to bring fulfillment, why lipstick is freaking awesome, and why open mindsets can lead to Puerto Rico or Texas or the woods of New York or wherever your heart leads you. I'd say this episode with Miranda left me with more than enough. Miranda, thank you so much for coming on the Party of My Plants podcast.
I am thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
This is actually a dream come true. You are one of those people who I've manifested slash forced my way into a friendship with. I don't know if this was a manifest as much as like a I need to be friends with her, so I'ma make it happen thing. But you are just a delight. I've listened to your podcast for so long. When I was moving your book about minimalism and getting rid of stuff, less stuff, was my Bible. I listened to you on audiobook. So to have you here on my show is a dream. So thank you really for coming here.
Well, that is all very kind. And I am a willing partner in this relationship.
You know, I'd manifest, that's called very high level manifesting then. So your work, you know, what really draws me to you, you're all about inspiring both creativity and adventure, which are two things that don't necessarily always go hand in hand. Like, one of your taglines is less stuff, more adventure. You know, we hear less stuff, more money. We hear less stuff, more time, more space. But we don't often hear those two ideas, less stuff and more adventure and also creativity, like all in one. So I have to start by asking, like, how did you arrive at your mission?
Yeah, I love talking through all the different less stuff, more XYZ, because there are kind of lots of different taglines and lots of different thoughts around what you gain when you decide to get rid of some things or declutter or, you know, minimalize your life. And for me, adventure encompasses freedom. It encompasses creativity and really just being able to boldly live my life because I'm less encumbered by all of the random belongings and commitments and the unnecessary. As I get rid of the unnecessary, then I can do the things I want to do. And I think of adventure not so much, although I love, you know, going on big hikes and climb. I grew up in Utah near the mountains, and we would literally like climb to the top of mountains fairly frequently. As you know, like that's not an unusual thing for me. Like we've done that kind of true adventuring. I've traveled the world. I've done lots of those big, what you think of as adventures. And I'm actually more often these days think of adventure as the mindset with which I approach whatever's happening next in my life, whether that's deciding that I want to begin a new business venture. And I do that with the mindset of adventure that just is open and curious and hopeful and creative. I think that the more open that we are with that kind of adventure head on, we remain able to receive all of these different nuanced ideas that otherwise we aren't open to. And I really think that creativity is something that can really just find its way into every area of our life, from the way that we organize our closet to the way that we market a new online course to the way that we homeschool our kids. I mean, it is really something that comes into play all the time in my life. And so that's what I hope to share with my all of the different ways that I share my message is that people can not only go and do big things, but they can live with this vibrance of exploring in their everyday lives.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Wow. So adventure mindset to you is open, curious, hopeful, and creative. Is that what I'm gathering? That's what you just said.
Yeah. Just recapping.
Just recapping. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So when you started as a blog in 2007, did you have it as flushed out as you just said? Because, or was it like you chose adventure and at the time, maybe that really meant like hiking and whitewater rafting and traveling, and now you're realizing it's more of a mindset? Or like, has this been there the whole time? Because that's just so well said and so inspiring and expansive. And like, are you just that brilliant that that's just been like that from the get-go?
No, absolutely not. This is one of the things that you stumble into understanding after like years and years of just doing things, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So before I started my blog in 2007, I lived a life of trying things out. I always said that I was a Jane of all trades, master of none. And for many, many years in my life, I felt like it was a deficit, that I was okay at lots of things. And a question that people have asked me over and over again throughout my lifetime is there anything that you don't do? Because I like to cook and I like to sew and I like to read. And I was a river guide. I was a snowboard instructor. I worked as a barista. I actually served Robert Redford a latte one time at Sundance.
LOL. I was a barista and served Will Arnett and Amy Poehler drinks and Sarah Silverman.
Parallel lives. I love it. I worked as a nanny. I worked as a
nurse,
Spanish medical interpreter. Yes, I'm a registered nurse. I actually still am a registered nurse. I have a license as a diabetes educator. I mean, I like felt like I lived 100 lifetimes because I was interested in trying things. I liked, you know, like, what is rock climbing like? I'm going to go try it and figure it out. What is it like to be on a drill team in high school? I'm going to try it out. Turns out it was really fun. I mean, and then some things that I tried that I was not good at. I did a stained glass class. My dad actually is a pretty great stained glass artist. Wow. Or was it? I don't think he's done it for a while, but I remember seeing some of the pieces that he had done growing up. I have one in my room now. And I thought that was so fun. And so I took this class and I was really into it. And I realized after, like, it was so fun, but probably not something that I'm going to like make part of my life and do again. But I tried it. So, I mean, I did all of these things and continue to want to do lots of different things. And I realize now as an adult that that is adventure. That is trying and being creative and letting myself sort of explore all the different things that are available to me as I settle into what I really love. And I mean, starting my blog was another one of those things. Like, I didn't have anything together then. I had been married for about 6 months. My husband and I were living in Puerto Rico at the time. I was in nursing school, and he had graduated and was planning to go to law school, but he had this kind of gap where he was waiting for me to graduate. And we decided, why not spend our summer working for this company that we were interns, and we managed a t-shirt shop at the port of Puerto Rico for the summer. And we were paid, and all of our living expenses were paid. So it felt like this like second honeymoon. We got to spend 4 months living on the island, and I spoke Spanish because I had lived before.
And of course you spoke Spanish in addition to all your other things.
It was so fun. And my husband actually was like, hey, let's do a blog because it's easier than emailing all of our friends and family what we're up to. So we just started to kind of report, you know, news from the island. And then when we moved back to Utah, where I was going to school, we kept it up. And I found it was a really fun outlet for sharing some of my DIY projects. You know, one of the first sort of craft projects I shared on my blog was that I bought these clearance beautiful linen napkins at Anthropologie, and they were too pretty to use as napkins. And so I used them, I ironed them out flat and used them as cushion covers for some throw pillows for my couch. And I was like, that was pretty creative. And maybe other people want to go like dive in the clearance bin at their local Anthropologie and make themselves some really cute pillows. So I started to sort of combine the crafty sort of hobby DIY pieces of my life with this sharing platform, you know, that at the time was kind of new. And boom, here we are.
Here we are. Now, is this adventure mindset genetic? Like, is this your whole family's thing? Because I know you have a lot of siblings. Is everyone as adventurous as you, or is this mindset you honed, you wanted, and then you worked towards? Like, talk to me about that.
I mean, I think some of it is genetic for sure. My dad and mom both are adventurous in their own ways. My dad for sure is like a jack of all trades. Like, he has done all the things. He always had a new hobby, and he would like dive into the hobbies just in the deep end, like get all of the gear and go to the classes and then like get us all on board. And we took like Taekwondo for a year and a half all together. He did some like competitive kite flying at one point in my life.
Like, I mean, okay. So this was like a family value.
Very much a family value. Mm-hmm. My dad always said, work hard, play hard. He owns his own company and did work really, really hard. And he also, I mean, part of that, he's a contractor. So he graduated with a degree, I think in engineering or construction management, started a construction company. And just like by virtue of his trade, he was like a know-how-to-do-it-all guy. He never hired people to come like do the plumbing or change the oil on the car. Like, these are all things that I learned how to do, like remove the P-trap when the sink is clogged. Like, I've never called a plumber to come like do a basic plumbing thing at my house because I learned how to do that when I was 8.
Oh my God, so you can do it.
Under the tutelage of my father. Wow. Very much so, yeah. So I think so much of it was just the environment that we grew up in. And you mentioned I have a lot of siblings. I'm the middle of 6.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that. I thought it was 4. 6.
Yeah. So my oldest brother is about 10 years older than me. And my youngest sister is 14 years younger than me. So we have this huge span, and we kind of dot it all within there. And it was really fun. And also, as just a byproduct of having so many kids at so many different stages, my parents weren't, and I say this with the most love and care and admiration, they were not very attentive to us.
That makes sense. Because you couldn't like nurture each of you. You're like, one's an adult and one's new.
Totally. I mean, they loved us and cared for us. And I absolutely always felt like I was loved and that I had everything that I needed from them, but they were not helicopter parents. I mean, we like played outside, we would go camping and like lose track of people for a while. And in the kitchen, neither of my parents really loved to cook. And my mom would kind of make a dinner and leave it on the stove and like, okay, you know, either eat this that I made, this random thing, or make something for yourself if you don't like it. And it was very much like welcomed, the like, explore in the cupboards and make something if you don't like what I made. Like, we grew up fairly independent, fairly, you know, with wings, which I think is something that I am like very much trying to channel and exercise with my own three children, because our society right now doesn't teach you how to allow your children to be free range like that. It's, I mean, I think the longer we've gone culturally, the more we sort of want to just put our kids on this little path and just like walk them through all of these steps. And I feel like I benefited so much from having the freedom of being able to explore and sort of figure out the way things worked and figure out what I like and suffer the consequences when I made mistakes. And so, yeah, that adventure mindset was very much like passed down and also just supported and encouraged by virtue of like, well, try it and see what happens.
I love that. It's like we are all supportive of free range chicken right now, right? Like that's a trending topic, but what about free range children? I just wrote that down. I thought that was quite funny.
Also healthy.
Yes. So you say you're, you know, at least growing up, or you were, you know, a Jane of all trades, master of none. I would say at least you're a master right now, in my mind, in minimalism. Would you own that?
Yeah, I think that this, I mean, this is something I've definitely focused on and am. I continue to explore the new ways that minimalism can benefit my life. And I've been on that pathway for about 7 years and I don't see any end in sight. Like, I think it's a continuous journey. I definitely, I mean, 7 years is a long time to spend really implementing sort of an ideal, and it has been amazing.
So how does stuff hinder adventure? Because if the whole saying is less stuff, more adventure, then it goes to show that stuff hinders adventure. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple ways. One is the actual physical demands of our stuff, that when you own things, you need to take care of them. Mm-hmm. That means you're organizing them. That means you're spending your weekends maybe like cleaning or de-junking the garage rather than taking your kids out on a hike or on a bike ride. The same time that you spend both shopping for, maintaining, cleaning, organizing, and de-junking, and then like driving to the donation center at the end of its life cycle, like all of that is time and energy that you could be using on other things if you just simply reduced. And I think that that happens like in kind, like an hour that you don't spend organizing the garage because it's simple enough that it's already pretty much organized is an hour that you get to spend on anything else that you want to do. I think I just realized I was the scale didn't fit. I mean, of course, we're living and we need to have some things in order to help with some of our adventures. But I kept analyzing and finding lots of different ways that the items that I owned weren't adding the same amount of value that they were detracting or sort of, you know, keeping me stuck. The other way that I would mention is simply financially, that when you spend money on material belongings, that's money that you're not spending on adventures, on experiences, on travel. And because I grew up traveling with my family, travel has always had a high priority in my life. From the time I was young, I would save money in order to go somewhere. Like I had like a trip in mind. I would get a basic idea of about how much it would cost. And then I would, you know, do all my babysitting and do all of my, you know, office cleaning and all the little jobs that I did in order to make money to go travel. I don't remember ever having that same mindset around like, I want to buy a coat and this is how much it costs and saving up for that. I've always had a little bit of a skew toward the spending my money on going out and seeing the world.
That's really interesting. So how would you define minimalism? Because there's a lot of different definitions floating around out there. What is yours?
Yeah, my definition of minimalism is choosing what matters the very most to you and giving it priority, and then consciously disregarding all of the rest.
Mm. Can you say that again? I mean, I'll just say it again. Well, you say it again. Someone should say it again.
You say it again.
Someone say it again. Should we rewind the tape?
I'll say it again. Just minimalism is choosing what really matters the most to you and giving it priority in your life, and then consciously disregarding all of the rest.
Consciously disregarding all this. I mean, why wouldn't we live a life like that? I mean, when you say, that's why I wanted you to say it again. Like, why is that not just the definition of life? Like, why is that the definition of a philosophy of like, why would you, what's the antidote? Why would you live oppositely to that? I'm just,
yeah, isn't like, that funny? It makes so much sense. And I think the reason that I have come up with in observation and observation of my own life and in now, you know, hearing from people who have listened to my show or read my book or joined one of my courses, that I think there's a key thing, and that is the awareness that we bring to our lives. Mm-hmm. That so many of us, I mean, truly, and I love technology, so I'm going to say this with like the most love possible. But the way that we receive messaging right now about how to live our lives is very constant. It's definitely far more information and ideas and beautiful pictures and stories. Like, we know what everyone's doing. We know what all the latest everything is. You know, we don't have to wait for a catalog in the mail or like go to the mall or watch a commercial on TV. We, in our the palm of our hands every day, are scrolling through millions of ideas of what mm-hmm. life should look like, quote unquote. Like, mm-hmm. this is what happiness is. This is what a good life is. This is what you should want or should aspire to. And so often we passively accept that messaging as right for us without stopping to check, like just pausing, taking a beat to say, is this right for me? Mm-hmm. Am I the person who wants to say yes to this? Or am I saying yes because it happens to be right there, or because I am wired to click and buy for a sale, or because an Instagrammer who I really admire and I really like her style because she has that coat, maybe that means that I want it too. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting things that I've learned about myself and just life in general. Now, this again is going to sound like something that is so obvious, but I feel like it blows my mind from time to time. This is something that I have learned. I can love something and not need to own it.
I've heard you say that before. No, it's really fascinating. Whenever I've heard you say that, it's like a humdinger.
Yeah.
You know, like
second. I can?
It's such a strange concept. Like, I'm just thinking like a pair of shoes or something. You know, there's all these shoes that you see people wear and you're like, oh, I should get one of those. Like, I like that. So that therefore I should own it. But mm-hmm. the idea of maybe I can just like respect the shoes. Like maybe when I see it, I can like them. Cool. Great shoes. Nice. I don't need them to be in my possession.
Totally. Yeah. We can like love and appreciate things and not need them. And the funny thing is that we often feel that like deep yearning for things. You know, humans are just wired for emotional connection, not only to each other, but also to our belongings. Like, we think that they will help us with our survival. A lot of that comes from the idea of having some sort of status within a tribe or a community. And the more status we have, the more valuable we are. So we'll be the last one to be killed off. And, you know, in the caveman days, like there's a lot of like true wiring for wanting to be that viewed a certain way and wanting to feel this certain way. And the really interesting thing to me is that with so many things that I have really yearned for emotionally connected to, like a pair of shoes, for example, or a coat or a bed frame that I'm like, oh my gosh, my room is just going to be so beautiful when I have that, you know, like that will be the thing that will make all the difference. We get it. And then how often after that do you feel that same dopamine hit? Like, do you have things that you loved so much when you got them that you kind of forget about? I think most of us do.
I mean, all the time. Like, it's almost like the chase is more fun. It's like, it's like the minute you put in your, now you don't even have to put in your credit card. You just hold your thumb down because Apple's memorized your card or whatever, you know, or whatever you're doing, show your face. And they're like, okay, it's shipped to your home now.
It will be there in 30 minutes on your doorstep.
Totally. It's literally that moment of like seeing the thing. Like, I will keep refreshing tracking information because I get so excited for that thing to come. But then once it's come, once it has arrived, unboxed, and it's in the closet or the wherever, I couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Because we're on to the next
thing.
On
to the new chase.
Okay, now, yeah, exactly. We have the domino effect and the snowball of like, once I get that,
dominoes and snowballs.
Exactly. It's a funny truth that as soon as you shine a light on it and you become aware of it in your own life, then you can decide if you want to do something about it. Now, I don't ever prescribe that people change their lives because I think that people know, I believe that people inherently know what is best for themselves. And I trust people to make good decisions for themselves.
That's really nice of you.
Well, yeah, you know, just assuming nobility. I also hope that as I share ideas and experiences, that people will begin to recognize themselves and be able to maybe have some new awareness that invites them to align their actions more fully with their values. Mm. I think a lot of times we think we know what we stand for and what we believe in and what we, you know, what we want our lives to look like and feel like. And yet we sort of live on default. We live like the pilot has fallen asleep mm-hmm. and the co-pilot is just driving the plane and it may not be headed in the direction that we want it to go, but we need to wake up in order to pay attention to that and know that we can choose at any time to take a right or take a left and start making some changes that align us more fully with the outcomes we hope for.
Was there a moment when you woke up from your co-pilot driving your plane? Like, did you have like a minimalism moment that sparked you going down this path 7 years ago?
Totally. I did. I mean, I think I had a series of small moments that added up to then when I had the big moment, it was like a smacked me in the face, you know? So a couple of the small things that happened were that I went to a conference, a blogger conference. And at this point I had been, this was 2013. I'd been blogging for 6 years. If my math is correct, I've been helping my sixth grader with math lately, and I have never doubted my math skills so fully than in the last couple months. So
that's hilarious. I think that's right.
So 6 years I had been blogging nearly daily without, it wasn't a job, it's a hobby. I had never done a sponsorship. I had never made a penny. I was just out of the sheer love of teaching and sharing and creating community online. This was something that was just very much a part of what I was doing. So I went to a blogger conference and one of the speakers, his name is Stefan Sagmeister. He's an incredible, just world-renowned graphic designer. And at the time he was speaking all about happiness. He had this new documentary coming out, The Happiness Project or The Happiness Film. And one of the things that he said, I mean, he said lots of great things and I loved listening to him. And one of the things that he said stopped me in my tracks in such a weird way. Because again, it's like one of those things that you, as soon as you hear it, you're like, yeah, of course. But I hadn't ever internalized it. Mm. He said, someone asked him about happiness. And he said, well, one of the ways that I live happily is I do more of the things that I like and less of the things that I don't like. And I was so dumb and so simple, but I think that I was like, you can do that. You can just choose to like do things that you like more and then like not do the things you do. I mean,
silly as humans. No, I know.
Yeah, right.
Also, I love that that's like something someone said on stage and he got paid to do. Like,
a lot of money. So that set me off. I mean, I left the conference. I had gone to the conference with this idea that I was going to leave with the tools to turn my hobby into a business. Like I wanted to come home, like equipped with all of it, like I had invested a lot to go. And I came home and my husband was like, what do you want to do? You know, what are the next steps? And I said, well, I'm going to quit blogging for a year because I want to have another baby. And he was like, what?
That's
you fly across the country to this major conference to like start your blog business. And I came home and said, I'm going to stop blogging for a while because what I really want, like when I tapped into that inner self, she said, I want to have one more baby and focus on our family and maybe drop some of the have to do's that I had sort of built up, which one of was blogging every single day.
I mean, every day. What were you even talking about? Like just your life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I did a ton of sewing. At the time I was running an Etsy shop and making custom women's clothing. So I did a ton of sewing posts. I talked about we lived in DC. So I talked about, you know, the restaurants and sites around DC and lots of meanderings. I had a whole section called Miranda's Meanderings and just journal style. I mean, that's what blogs were back then.
That's interesting.
So, that was one little moment. I mean, it was a big moment, but it was a little moment. In the same year, my husband, we decided kind of in the same vein, like we had been racing life in DC. He worked at a really highly motivated law firm and he spent so many hours there and it just felt like we couldn't actually catch our breath. Like he was making great money, but at the expense of ever seeing each other and seeing our kids. And, you know, so we decided we wanted to pull back a little bit on work and find a little bit more family friendly environment. So he took a job in Austin, Texas, and we moved to Austin. And when we moved, we decided we'd been living in small apartments in the city, you know, all about city living. We're like, we're moving to Texas. So we bought a half acre and we built this big, beautiful ranch home. And I had the baby and we were like rolling down this pathway of all the things, you know, we sort of like had made it. Like we had three kids and a dog and a house with a big yard and a great job. And, you know, we were all sort of doing our things and I wasn't super satisfied. I was super frazzled. I was like, gosh, three kids is like 100,000
kids. Yeah, that's a lot of kids.
So let me fast forward to my next aha moment. This was the big one, the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back was I had taken some time off from blogging and then come back to it after my daughter was born and decided I'm going to do this as a job. So I started to work on sponsorships and because of the community I had built over the past 6.5 years, I was able to quickly and easily secure sponsorships and work with some agencies. And it was really fun. I was really enjoying it. And one of the campaigns that I got was about organizing my kitchen cabinets.
Okay.
And so I was working with a home goods store to organize my kitchen cabinets. And they gave me a budget of like $400 to go to the store and buy all of the organizing supplies, right? The containers and the spinners and the clear things and the baskets and everything that
Lazy
you need
Susans.
To buy. Lazy Susan, all of these things that you need. I mean, this just like, let's slow this down. $400 worth of items that you need to buy in order to put into your cabinet.
To organize your items. Organize
all of the crap that is already living in your cabinets. I mean, I remember going to the store and I was super excited about this. I have always liked organization. I like design. You know, so I went to the store. I had measured out my cabinets. I had was over a shopping, like I was pushing a shopping cart and pulling one behind me. That's how much space this stuff took up. And I went home. I mean, I bought it all and I went home and I started to organize my kitchen cabinets. I had four cabinets that were kind of like the office area of the kitchen, honestly. I had open shelving for like my dishes on one side, and then I had these four closed cabinets, and they were where I had to pull things out. And it was like just the whole room was full of stuff. By the time I pulled everything out of the cabinets, it was like things that party supplies from 2 years before, and a piece of mail that I had like gotten and thought I would run over to the neighbor and totally forgotten about, and like months before, and you know, 75 Sharpie markers and a bunch of like wallpaper. I mean, it was just everything. A pair of soccer cleats. I mean, just so much stuff. And I don't think this is unusual. Like, I wasn't unusually messy or cluttery. This is an average kitchen cabinet situation. And I remember standing there looking around at all of the stuff I had pulled out and these bags and bags of organizing supplies that I had just spent good money on, you know, money for a plane ticket to go to the beach. I had just spent on clear containers.
I love that. That's how you equate things. That's your mindset. That's so fascinating.
I'm not even using the stuff that I already have. Like, what is the purpose of buying more? Like, why do I go to Target and wander the aisles just in case there's something new that I haven't seen yet that I might possibly want? Like, I remember that as a mentality that I would go to Target, like needing to buy toothpaste. And I would tell myself, I'm going to do a quick, like circle, like a quick walkthrough, because what if there's something new and I don't know if I want it until I see it?
Oh, I've done that. Everyone's done that. I know if you're listening, you've done that too. Maybe today. If you're doing that now while you're listening. Target,
and there's that really cute thing right there, you don't need it. There's the meme about, like, you don't make a list when you shop at Target. You go to Target and let Target tell you what you need.
I'm really new to Target life because we just bought this hat, well, a year out of the city. And I obviously wasn't going to Target in the city. And so I've done that. I've walked in and been like, I need one thing, just like you said. And I'm like, I'm just going to stroll. I'm sure there's some clothes that would be fun. Like, maybe there's something in this aisle. Like, let's just see what happens.
Let's just see what Target tells me today that I need in order to make my life feel better, happier, prettier, lovelier, more successful, you know, mm-hmm. more advanced, more put together, all of these things. And I remember just standing in my kitchen looking around and thinking, I don't believe it anymore. Like, if I need something, I want my life to inform me of that. I don't want social media or the store or my sister's, you know, recent shopping trip. Like, I want my everyday experience to inform me of the things that will add value to my life. Because if not, the messaging will never end.
Yeah. Wow. That's the moment. You just claimed it. Today's episode is thrilled to have an amazing sponsor, Amazing Grass, who grows and bottles amazing grasses. Their green superfood powders are an insanely tasty blend of nutritious greens, phytonutrient-packed fruits, veggies, grasses, digestive enzymes, and probiotics that I can't and do not want to live without. I am an enormous fan of their watermelon energy flavor, which I drink every single morning in 12 ounces of water, plus 2 heaping tablespoons of apple cider vinegar and a splash of honey or stevia. But they've got a massive assortment of grassy products for you to check out and fall in love with. Oh, and their effervescents. I love those too. They're so handy for traveling. And when airplane traveling was a thing, I'd always pop a hydration effervesce in my free cup of water on the plane and drink it, or drink it right in a bottle when I'd land. To make Amazing Grass even more amazing, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 30%, yep, 30%, not some measly 10%, 30% off your Amazing Grass orders if you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use coupon code PLANTPARTY30 at checkout. That is PLANTPARTY30 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. So what did you do? So how did you then turn that into, spoiler alert, you decided at some point to explore minimalism and then you wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
And so, like, how did that transpire?
So exactly. Very soon after that experience, this was in December, and my husband told me about a documentary that was on Netflix that was new about minimalism and we should watch it. And he's like, I think you'll love it. And I watched it. And there were parts of it that I loved, and there were parts that felt like a box that I couldn't fit myself into because I wasn't like a single wealthy man traveling the world with a suitcase.
Oh, really? You weren't?
No.
Only black with like just a chair in your apartment.
And one pair of shoes, you know.
One glass. Literally,
glass.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, there's just this idea of minimalism that didn't exist in my world. I had a house and a yard and a family, and I love collecting cake plates, and I like clothing, and I love to sew, and I think fabric is fun, and, you know, they're like, it wasn't like reduce everything and just live off of the land. I wanted to live a cozy, full life, really enhancing the things that I care about, but I also saw that there was space to discard the rest. And so after watching it, my husband and I were discussing it, and it just popped in my head, this idea. One of the things that I really loved about it was the idea that came up over and over again of using what you had. And I felt like that had really echoed what I thought as I was organizing those cabinets. Like, I already have all of this stuff. Why am I looking for more? Like, I probably have enough in my house right now to survive happily for a long time. And so I brought that up and I said, what if we just decide to not buy anything else for a while? Like, why don't we just take a break from shopping and use up what we have first and then go and start, you know, adding things as needed rather than having adding things be the regular part of life and then every once in a while needing to like de-junk because there's not enough space left, you know? And he was on board and we the only reason I think we decided on a year was because it was the first week of January. And
nice.
That's what everyone's thinking about. What am I going to do this New year? You know, what is the year going to look like? And so that was the first week of 2017. And we looked ahead, you know, I said, do you think we could do a year? And I kind of mentally walked through like, well, I have 72 Sharpies, so I'm definitely not going to need more of those this year. And, you know, we have enough clothes that we lived in Texas. And so our kids basically wore the same clothes year round, maybe just added like some cowboy boots and a sweater in the winter. But other than that, like it wasn't a dramatic change in seasons. Little kids grow, but they also wear a lot of stretchy clothes. Like my daughter can wear the same dress for 2 to 3 years and it just gets a little shorter, you know? So we just start adding
like a mini skirt.
So, I mean, I think that we were already sort of like, okay, yeah, we can totally do this. And it felt energizing. It felt relieving. Like sometimes I tell people about that. Like we spent a whole year not shopping and not buying anything that wasn't a consumable item. And people like panic. Like I can see their heart rate go up and their anxiety level just like rise. And they're like, how, you know, like it doesn't feel like relief to them when they think about it. And it felt like relief to me. It felt like, oh my gosh, how amazing will it be to not have to think about buying anything?
I mean, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, right?
It sounds awesome. I've thought about I don't buy all that much, I don't think, but one of my favorite things to buy is like lipsticks. I don't know why. And especially now is the worst time to have like a lipstick problem because no one's seeing my lips.
You need to just do a daily lipstick post.
Right? I'll like That's them. It. Thanks. That's just, I just, every time when I lived in Williamsburg, there was a natural makeup store right up the street from me. And every time I was in a good mood, I'd be like, it's lipstick day, baby. I'd go buy like a lipstick. But I'm just circling back to what you said about you can love something, but not need to own it. And I've really applied that to my lipstick problem. Like I can love different lipsticks, but how often do I need to change my lip color? How many shades of berry are there really? All right.
Right.
Come on now.
Yeah.
That's a little irrelevant to your point.
But. Even like using them. I mean, I think that the relevancy is just the idea of like, it's great to love lipstick. I think that that's fantastic. If it like brings you joy, that's great. Are you buying lipstick and wearing it once and then tucking it away and never wearing it again? Because in that case, maybe you just dash into the natural lipstick store and put on a shade, but you don't buy the whole tube and you wear it out on the town and see how it feels, you know? Mm-hmm. And once you're committed, then you buy it because you want to use it over and over again. But I think, I mean, it brings up a good point that so many of us buy things for a one-time use situation.
Yeah.
And there are lots of other ways to handle that. You can borrow from a friend. You can rent things. You can, you know, like dashing into the lipstick store and trying on a little trial. Like there are lots of ways to decide before making the commitment. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but those things really contribute to community. Like one of the things that happened during our year was that we've always done family pictures, annual family pictures, and some people dread it. I love it. I think it's so fun from the choosing where we're going to take them to the coming up with the outfits to the hiring the photographer. Like it's been so fun. We use them for our Christmas cards every year. And we were visiting Utah, which is where I grew up, and we weren't buying anything. We just had like our little suitcases and I hadn't packed specific outfits for family pictures because we got there and I realized I knew some photographers in Utah and I would rather hire one of those than find someone brand new that I didn't know of when we got to Virginia, which is where we were moving. And so on a normal year, I would take a day, decide like, what is our color scheme and go get outfits matching, like kind of perfectly coordinated, but not quite matchy.
Oh, I know.
You know what I'm talking about. Family picture outfits, you know, like all the little things. And I would go maybe to 5 or 6 stores and get all the things and have our perfect outfits laid out. And then we'd get all dressed up and we'd do our pictures. It'd be fantastic and fun. And then we may or may not use those clothes. I mean, we'd use them, but we didn't need them. Like we had things, you know? So this year, rather than going and getting matching coordinating outfits, I raided my sister's closet and I got a great outfit and her husband lent clothes to my husband and her kids lined up close enough. Like we kind of used some stuff from their suitcases and added some other things. And we spent an hour and a half just hanging out and chatting and going through and trying things on. And it was this fun just hanging out with my sister while we prepared and borrowed these clothes rather than me by myself frantically shopping to get all the stuff that we needed. And then once the pictures were over, we gave them all back. And that was, you know, like, it was so nice to see that I didn't have to sacrifice wearing the cute outfits or having the experiences that I wanted, but I also didn't have to shop to get them. I could create the experience using what was already available, either through my own resources or those of my friends and family.
Totally. I've been doing this new thing called going to the library.
Yes.
And I've been, instead of just buying any book that piques my interest, I go to the library and I borrow it. And if I read like 75 or 100 pages and like love it, gotta have it, then I purchase it.
Hey.
How about them?
You mean that there are these places that you can go that have thousands of books and you can just take them home and read them?
For free.
For free?
Yep.
What?
Literally, I went today and I was like, I needed to renew 2 books. And I'm like, hi, I'm here to renew books. She's like, you could do that online. And I said, oh, okay. And how long can they like renew for? And she's like, the same length of time as it was to rent them or borrow them. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm new to the library.
I'm new to this. I am a library newbie.
I was a kid. But it's changed my life.
Best thing ever.
It's like a gift. It's beautiful.
You can read magazines at the library. You can get audiobooks at the library. There are library type things for lots of things. For example, have you heard of maker spaces? Maker spaces exist in almost every major city right now. Usually they're connected to a university, but this is a place that they will have a laser cutter, a 3D printer, an industrial sewing machine. They'll have a screen printing section, a letterpress thing, like all of this, these kind of arts and crafts and or tech and engineering type equipment. And oftentimes they'll have classes and things where you can like take a letterpress class and then you can rent the letterpress machine by the hour to go in and do it on your own. I started using makerspaces when I lived in Washington, D.C. There's a great little, it's called a Book Arts Center. It's in Silver Spring, Maryland, called the Pyramid Atlantic. I think it's called Pyramid Atlantic. And so I took a letterpress class and I loved it. And so I got certified to use the machines on my own. Of course, you know, add it to the list. And for a couple years, I would go up there at least once a month. I mean, I was sending like these beautiful hand letterpressed thank you cards and birthday cards. And it was so fun, both the hobby and that, you know, having these beautiful handmade results. But I didn't invest in a letterpress machine. I didn't create space in my house or my yard for one. There's so many different ways. The same thing, there's lots of like co-ops for tools within neighborhoods. And I think it's a great idea to just like explore.
Adventure.
Yeah, explore. What are the different ways that you could accomplish your goal without buying all of the things that you think you need? Try borrowing first.
I wrote down minimalism equals mindfulness. I feel like that's just the name of the game here. It's just living mindfully, because originally you said, you know, minimalism is about kind of like rearranging your life according to your values, spark notes and summarizing. And that takes mindfulness. That takes becoming mindful of what are my values and then being mindful of what do I have? What am I doing that's not supporting my values or actually detracting from my values? I mean, minimalism equals mindfulness.
100%. Yeah. Mindfulness, awareness, intention.
Yeah. It's an intentional life.
It's just being awake.
Yes.
Being awake. Woke. Being aware.
Very woke.
It is a woke. It is a woke way to live. Yeah. I mean, I think that as soon as people start, like, a lot of people maybe recoil a little bit at the word minimalism. So I think the idea of intentional living or mindful living or presence or, you know, a values driven life, like those things might feel a little bit more like a soft cushion to land in, because we do sometimes equate minimalism with this stark, you know, kind of no nonsense reality that I don't believe, like, I don't subscribe to that myself. I live in a very cozy home. There's a ton of art on my wall. Like, you wouldn't walk
into
my
house.
Your
home is so cozy based on what I see on the social webs.
So cozy. I love it.
Well, you move, spoil again, you know, skipping ahead from that ranch house, you moved into a much smaller house, right? That was part of your minimizing journey.
Yeah, totally. We, halfway through our year of not shopping, took a job opportunity that even further advanced our family-friendly lifestyle. So from a great family-friendly law firm into an in-house counsel position in Richmond, Virginia, which for people who aren't aware of all the law stuff.
And, myself included.
I mean, working for a law firm, you're just working on an hourly, like billed hours. And so the more hours you do, the more money you make. And there's kind of like an endless pursuit of, I mean, you can just keep working.
Because you're
forever,
just billing. Right? Yeah, that's how you make money. You're
billing
just
billing hours. And in an in-house position, you're an, you know, salaried employee of a major company, or I guess a minor company, but my husband works for a great major company. And so his office hours went from sort of untethered whenever you can get your work done, including the weekends if you want, including
like as much
the middle
as
of the night if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Two, come in at 8:30, leave at 5.
Wow.
You know, take a lunch break. During the summers, he has half days on Friday. It's like he's off at noon and just comes home and we all go to the beach. Like, I mean, it's so amazing and just was a really great opportunity. So we took that. And in that, we recognized this opportunity. Whenever there's an opportunity for change, that feels like exploration to me. Like
adventure.
We're moving. It's adventure. Ding, ding, ding. So rather than just like a sideways move into another big house on a big lot in the suburbs, we took a second to decide and evaluate, again, this mindfulness. What do we love about where we live? What would we change about it? Because we have this opportunity to make changes if we want to right now, like in the middle of decision making. And I did this quick sort of evaluation in my head about the actual square footage of our house, which was close to 2,500 square feet, which I know for some parts of the country, that is a small house. For some parts of the country, it's a gigantic house. Mm-hmm. For Texas, it was sort of average. I determined that there was probably about half of it that we weren't using regularly.
Wow.
I always folded the laundry in the living room watching a show. That was like one of the best parts of folding the laundry. I had a full laundry room that I never used. We had an indoor dining room that was like a formal dining room that we never used. We always ate either at the on the outside, like back porch. We love eating outside. So we had a huge dining table on the back porch. We also had a kitchen table and an island with a bar. Like there were lots of different places to eat. We never used the dining room. Mm-hmm. I had a studio that was in the front of the house that I used for work. And I realized that that was something I could easily, and actually it would feel like a great relief and progress in my business to offshore that from mm-hmm. the house itself. So here in Richmond, I rent a studio for my business, and I don't have it at home, which is so nice. I'm here now by myself. My kids are all at home with dad, and like it actually has added so much benefit to not have it be right at home. So we decided to try out 1,000 square feet.
Wow.
And with 3 kids and a dog.
Wow.
And it was, the first home that we moved into was a rental. Again, we were like, we're going to try this out. We're going to see how it goes. And so we found a rental, 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom rental. And after living there for about 6 months, we loved it. And actually it was hilarious how little the change of space impacted our everyday lives.
That's really fascinating.
We were still hanging out together, watching TV or folding the laundry. We were eating our meals in the kitchen table. We were playing in the backyard. Like we realized how we just don't happen to like sprawl out across 7 rooms all the time, you know? So we did determine though that 1 more bedroom and bathroom would probably make more sense. My kids, I had 3 kids and the playroom and all their, you know, all their toys, clothes, everything in one small room. So we ended up buying a home, and we've since renovated it, you know, inside and out so that it fits our lifestyle even better, but it's just 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 1400 square foot home. And we love it. Like we feel like we're in the sweet spot right now. Now, that said, I love the idea of sort of allowing your life to change as it will, you know, like not repressing like, oh no, my kids are growing up and I feel like I might need another bedroom soon, but I'm a minimalist and so I'm going to mm-hmm. stay in a small house forever, you know. We feel like we probably have 2 to 3 more years in our current home before we're going to want another bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just have that insight. It's like, okay, in a couple years, we'll probably move up another 200 or 300 square feet. And that will be fantastic. And whether it's an addition on our current home or whether we hop into a different home that suits our needs just a little bit better for a new stage of life, I'm open to that and flexible to it. And I love that right now we aren't living in a home that is double the size of what we're actually using with quote unquote space to grow. Like yeah. I'm happy to live in a home that fits our current needs, you know, 5 years or so of our needs, and then to make a change, whether to the home or to where we live, when that happens. And, you know, a lot of people might not like that idea. We happen to be a fairly transient family for whatever reason. We've lived.
Yeah, you've lived in a lot of places.
A lot of places for both school and then work, you know, job changes and things. And so we're open to the idea of that, where I know some people want to like buy a forever home and mm-hmm. live in it and never move again. And I just think that in our day and age, the reality that you're going to buy a home in your 20s and live in it until you're 70 is probably low. Mm-hmm. That's just not the way that the world works right now. And I don't love the idea of locking myself into that because it creates so much emotional trauma. Like when you do move, you're just so sad because you built this whole idea in your head about the future that you then have to like grieve to move on, rather than just being open to the possibility of like, yeah, I love where we are right now. And at some point, if we need to make a change, I'm open to that too.
I'm so with you. When we were moving, everyone kept asking, is this your forever home? And I was like, I've never thought of what? No, nothing's I can't even get a tattoo. I can't do anything forever. The only forever I have is my husband. But other than that, you know, it's not my forever home. But, you know, we're talking about homes and moving and all that. And I think that's when the idea of minimalism really rises to the surface for many people, myself included. Like I said, your book was my Bible. I read it, I listened to it like 3 times on repeat as I was packing and as I was unpacking. And it really helped me. I mean, I got rid of like 108 books when I moved. I got rid of a lot of clothes. I really got rid of stuff with your encouragement through Audible. hashtag sponsor. No, not sponsor.
Try your first Audible for free.
But do you feel that one needs to move in order to embrace minimalism? Or, I mean, we're in this pandemic. Everyone's just hanging around their homes. Is now an okay time?
Oh my gosh.
Is now a good time?
Such a good time. Yeah. I think that a lot of people in the last 6 months have realized both how much stuff they have that they don't use, that they're like, why is this in the way? Mm-hmm. And also, I actually heard someone say the other day, if you have either rooms or items that you haven't used in 2020, the chances are that you're never going to use it.
It's so because true. Like you're at home. Like,
when else? You know, when else will you have the opportunity? I guess the one caveat to that might be like entertainment. Yeah, like if you have like serving dishes and you're not having any parties or some clothes for sure. Because I definitely have mostly worn the same pair of
lipstick. Lipstick is an exception.
Oh my gosh. I wore lipstick the other day and I felt like a different person.
I know.
Like I felt like, wow, I actually am like alive.
I know. Lipstick.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It is good. I think right now is a great time. So I think moving forces you to confront your belongings in a way that a lot of people just don't do on a regular basis. It's fascinating to see when you take things out of even a small area like a drawer, like your junk drawer, you take everything out of it and it will be 3 times the amount of things that you even thought possibly would fit in that area. As you take things out, they multiply. And so we feel especially safe when our things are all put away and like behind closed doors, because we're like, oh, well, I don't see any clutter. But as soon as you start taking it out and sort of looking through it, you realize that you've been hanging on to things that you don't need, don't use, or that you totally forgot about. And there's no reason to not clear open that space and to, you know, feel like you have the openness for like breathing and possibility and just not having the weight of knowing like, oh, there's so many things around here. It's a weird sort of psychological weight too, that you don't recognize until you start getting rid of things. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, I feel lighter.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that I was heavy.
Have there been anything that you've gotten rid of that you have like missed later? I'll answer that first myself. I got rid of one pair of pants that I regret. And maybe like 2 books, but that's easy enough to go back to the library, make sure I love it, and then order it used online or something like that. But that's really it. And I got rid of so much stuff.
Yeah. I don't think that I have anything that I can think of that I wish I hadn't gotten rid of.
Wow.
I have a chair that it took me about 3 different times. I actually would drive it to the donation center
and
like put it on the thing, and like I'd get it out of the car even. And actually the second to last time I took a picture of it because I wanted to text my husband and say, I'm doing it, like it's gone. And then I saw it sitting there and I was like, but I love it. And so I put it back in the car and drove it home.
That's
hilarious. But the truth is that I didn't have the right space for it. So even though I loved the chair by itself on an island, it doesn't
you
fit
and the chair.
In my house. And I was like, I had a friend suggest I put it in storage until I move. Which I'm like, I don't know when I'm moving.
Then it's weighing on you. That's going to weigh on you.
Yeah, what the heck? I'm going to pay $50 a month to store a chair so that there's a chance that in the future I'm, you know. And
it's true.
Granted,
it's
like a vintage chair, and it's not like I can quickly and easily go replace it. And I have not missed it. Like, the only time I think about it is when someone asks me, like, is there anything that you know, I'm like, no, and I don't miss it. And I loved it, and it served its purpose really beautifully in, like, 3 different homes. And I never think about it. I never stare longingly in the corner where it didn't fit.
Wish that you see, like, I see like a chair-shaped hole in your heart. You know?
Yeah. I do have a couple things though that I have used up. And this was a whole new thing to me before the year of not shopping. Now, just a quick note, we didn't like decide we're going to not shop for a year, so let's go buy all the things we think we might need, like kind of stock up.
Like in the beginning of the pandemic with the toilet paper brigade.
Toilet paper and batteries. We just were like started from one day to the next. Like I did buy an Instant Pot and a Dolly Parton Vibes t-shirt because they
of
were
course.
Both things that I had been thinking about buying, and I was like, well, I'm just gonna hurry and get them tonight, and tomorrow I start.
It's like before a diet when you're like, I'm just gonna finish the Oreos and then tomorrow
I begin. So I continued wearing the clothes that I had been wearing that were just part of my wardrobe, and I just didn't add anything new, and so I was wearing them over and over again, and at points where I might have added something new, I didn't. So I was just rotating through the same clothes that I like, but I rotated through them. By the end of the year, I had walked all the way through 2 pairs of shoes, like two,
whoa,
like holes in the soles of the shoes. And I had like, there, I had some t-shirts that actually had started getting little holes in them that it was fine if it was like underneath something, but not great by itself. And so it was a really interesting thing to see how much do our clothes stand up to being worn over and over. Most people don't get to that point. Like, most people donate or throw away or
ignore,
give to a friend,
forget. Yes.
They even get to the point. And so,
oh my God, yes. When I finished a chapstick last year, and I like I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is the first time in my life I finished a chapstick. I went to the end. I hit the plastic snub.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting that this is a big moment for me.
Well, it just goes to show that we really don't use things up.
Totally.
Like, we use things to part way. Some things we use like once or twice. Other things we use several times, but just to kind of part way. And very, very seldom in our lives do we use something all the way to completion.
Totally.
And there's something really satisfying about that that I appreciate. And I feel like that was like a different kind of fulfillment, feeling like this thing has served its purpose so well all the way to the end of its life. And like, there's no more sustainable thing you can do than use something all the way up, like, until it's gone.
It's really,
you know,
interesting. Psychologically, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that was very satisfying.
Okay, so if someone's listening and they're like, I want in on this, or at least I'm curious, what do you tell people about how to get started?
So I mean, I think that my book is a great place to start. If someone hasn't heard of or read my book, it's called More Than Enough: How One Family Cultivated a More Abundant Life Through a Year of Practical Minimalism.
I recommend it on Audible. Yeah.
Talia recommends it on Audible. If you are not an Audible user, you could probably get it for free to try it out. It's also available at lots of libraries, and you can buy it on Amazon. I mean, it's available as a Kindle as well if you'd like to read it that way. Some of the things that I love about the book, do you have a hard copy of it or you just
just the odd.
Oh my gosh, girl, I'm going to send you a hard copy. Thanks. Because one of my favorite parts, you probably hear me at the end of all the chapters say, for the PDF exercises that go along with this chapter, mm-hmm. refer to the PDF that accompanies the audiobook. So if you get it in Audible or in Kindle, you can print the PDF. But I organized it in a way where at the end of every single chapter, there is a space for application. And I give you some very specific invitations, like whether to reflect on something and write it down or try something out for a little while. Like I give you the exercises that I prescribe for getting started in all of the different ways. Some of them are for like recognizing what you have. Some of them are for, I talk a little bit, there's a whole chapter about energy management and how to use your energy in ways
that
are beneficial. So the hard copy is really great because it does, I mean, you can write right in it. It's intended to be used as sort of a memoir/workbook mm-hmm. so that people can get started.
Okay. Well, now I need a hard copy.
I will absolutely send
consume one. A new item and not get a new item.
I mean, you can use it and then give it to a friend if you want, but it's really great. I designed it that way.
That's awesome. So how have you heard of readers' lives changing from minimalism? I mean, we've heard your story. My story is just that I got rid of a lot of stuff when I moved. And so for me, it was more about curating the items that I own to really reflect who I want to be and who I am. And I got rid of so much stuff that I'd been carrying with me through past lives, you know, mm-hmm. like high school, childhood, college. Like I'm 31. I'm still cleansing myself of college clothes. Truly. Like I'm like literally like, all right, I think I can pass on this sweater. I wore that in college. Like it's, you know, like just getting rid of that dead weight, that energy is so amazing. What are some other ways that you've heard other people's lives really improve with your ideas of minimalism?
Well, that it has been so fun to hear about people's experience with the book, with my story. A lot of book readers become podcast listeners or vice versa. And I've had several people tell me that they have, because of our experience and example, gone on to do 6 months or a year of their own challenge of not buying things, and how that has really sort of been an awakening for them and enabled them to live life a new way. One of my favorite things that I hear is that, especially in the last 6 months, I've had multiple people tell me that because they had read the book or listened to the podcast previously, they had a mindset of abundance coming into the pandemic and the quarantine. And so when everything started shutting down and life has been so abnormally stressful, you know, globally, they felt like they had some coping and some resilience, like mental and emotional resilience and physical resilience, that they were prepared to use what they had to not feel like they had to go charge the grocery store, and they could see with new eyes that they were surrounded by all of the things that they needed in order to be fulfilled and satisfied and safe and happy. And that is such a powerful tool. I mean, just having the ability to see your life through a lens of abundance when the whole world is just enveloped in scarcity, that's a leg up. I mean, that is a huge, huge, powerful idea.
Wow. Well, I had written down a question to ask you, which is, what do you define as enough? And I feel like you just defined it.
Yeah.
Like that's it, you know, like that. And or the fact that minimalism empowers you to embrace enoughness is really what you're saying. I mean, I guess, how would you define enough? How does one know when they have enough? What does that feel like?
Okay, so this is one of my favorite concepts, because something that I had ringing in my head in 2013, 2014, 2015, all the way until we decided to just like embrace using what we had and deciding that what we had was enough, was a quote that I had heard in a talk on the TV years before, where the speaker said that this is the quote, "There is no end to what the world has to offer. Therefore, it is critical that we learn to recognize when we have enough." And what I took from that was that there isn't a level, there isn't a number, there isn't an amount. It is a decision. When we decide that we recognize what we have as enough, then it becomes enough. We make what we have enough by deciding that it is.
Oof, chills. It's true.
It's true. It couldn't be any other way, because any other way results in an endless pursuit of more. And there isn't an end to more. More leads to more leads to more. Enough has to be a decision. It has to be a pause and an awareness and an awakening and a gratitude of what is currently existing, and embracing that enoughness that is inherent to, I believe, all of the moments of our life. We can choose right now that what we have is enough, and it becomes enough in the instant that we decide it.
And I love the word enough, because it kind of, you know, encompasses gratitude, you know, being grateful for what you have. It also overlaps with abundance, which is like, you know, feeling like you have it, have good things or whatever. I don't know how one would define it. How do you define abundance? Like, I have enough. I have enough.
Yeah, I think abundance is the idea that there is enough, not only for you and that you have enough, but there's enough for everyone.
Oh, thank you.
You know, that versus someone else having something, taking away from your ability to have it.
So abundance is like the opposite of scarcity mindset, then.
Totally.
Got it.
Yep.
But enough is like, it's a layman's term word. There's no fluff to it. It's enough, like, period. Like, and by having that period that goes along with the idea of enough, it's just my shoulders relax.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a softening. It's like, enough. Like, it's enough. No more striving. No more, no more collecting. No more buy. Like, oh, it's enough. That's just what I feel. And it's just such a beautiful way to live.
Yeah, it is a relief. And, you know, one of my favorite things, because I have found I'm a motivated, you know, achievement-minded person. I have always been high energy. I've always wanted to go and do and see and
adventure.
Try.
Adventure.
Right? There we go. Ding, ding, ding. I have been so pleasantly surprised by how, when I decided that I had enough and started living from this place of inherent abundance, it didn't just make me lazy. For example, I didn't stop wanting to achieve things. I didn't stop wanting to produce things in my business and in my life. I didn't want to stop traveling or stop improving, both personally and, you know, renovating my house. And I always have a project happening in the background. And I've had people say, well, how do you balance that? Like, how can you think that something's enough and still want to improve it? Mm. And the beauty has been for me that as soon as you decide that it's enough, the improvement is all fun. None of it feels like weight, like I have to get this done in order to be successful. I have to make this happen in order for my kitchen to be beautiful. You can love what is and want to improve or change or progress for the fun of it. And that has such a different weight and such a different experience than needing to do it in order for validation.
Hell to the yes. It's really the difference between that striving, that like, when I have, you know, like, you always do have a project. I mean, you have your garden, your backyard, you have chicken. I don't know. You're always doing backyard things. Like, you always have stuff. But what I'm hearing and what makes so much sense is that's just funsies. You know, it's not like, oh, when I have my garden or my hot tub set up or whatever you have going on back there, like, you know, you have a lot, then I will be happy. But until then, I do not have enough. It's like, I'm chilling, but like, this will be fun.
Yeah. Like, I'm happy every step of the way.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like, which is so fun. Like, that's great. I am thrilled with my life today. with things halfway done, and I'm going to be just the same amount of thrilled when it's done, and then I'm going to be thrilled the day after when I decide something else that I want to work on. And it was really interesting writing the book because I spent the year doing the challenge, and then I spent a year sort of ruminating on the ideas and, you know, how I was going to pull it all together. And then I decided to start writing it, and I started writing, and I loved writing. I loved the experience. I loved putting the stories down and fleshing them out, and the back and forth with the editor. And I mean, I thought the whole process was really fun, and it was getting ready to come out, like to release. And I had a bunch of people say, you know, how do you feel? Like, are you so excited? Do you feel like you're going to be so satisfied on that day? Or like, is your whole life is going to change on Tuesday when it releases? And I was like, no, I have felt all of the success and joy and fun all along the way. The release day was great, and the day before was great too, and the day after, and it's 2 years later, and it's all great now too. I mean, everything about it just felt okay because I didn't have to write a book or publish a book in order to feel like I was successful.
So you're saying this mindset carries over into other areas besides just our desk drawers.
Into every area of our lives.
Ain't that magical?
Yeah.
Magical moment, as you would say. Okay, before I let you go, I made a note. Cake plates. You said you love cake plates. What do you do with your cake? You must not just eat cake all the time. What do you do interesting things with them?
We do eat a lot of cake.
Okay, that's great. I love cake.
I love to entertain. And so and I also think it's fun to make things fancy just for fun. Mm-hmm. So I worked at Williams-Sonoma when I was in college. And
I could so see you working at Williams, and you'd be just like perky. Hey, can I help you today?
Yeah. Oh my God. It was so fun. So I got my first cake plate when I worked there. And, you know, there was like a beautiful one with the dome and all of those things. And then I just thought they were fun. So, I mean, I don't have a million, but I think I have like 6 or 7. And I use them regularly. Like we baked a cake this week for our anniversary. We do a family party with our kids.
Yeah, and so family anniversary, where apparently that means you celebrate your wedding anniversary as like, this is when we became a family.
Yeah, the birthday of our family.
It's like genius.
It's fun.
So
well, the kids
sweet.
Love it because they want to be involved.
I'm going to do that. I know. I never gave two hoots about my parents' anniversary. They would get mad at me, well, not mad, but like disappointed every year because I didn't wish them or like do anything great for their. Yeah.
I didn't care.
And I literally was like, why does this affect me?
Totally.
Like, I'm like, congrats. I'm really happy for you, but like, this has nothing to do with me.
Exactly how I felt, and that's why we adopted this tradition, because I want my kids to recognize that like our marriage was the formation of our family.
It's so brilliant.
So they get to celebrate with us, and we watch our wedding video every year.
Oh.
And I mean, it's so fun.
And you make a cake. You made a 5-layer cake for each family member?
Each person chose the flavor,
and we stacked
them all up, and it was so fun. And
You're
we used a beautiful cake plate. And the cake, I mean, there's still like a quarter of it left sitting on the counter. We're eating it for breakfast slowly.
Oh my God. You're the coolest mom.
I just like to have, you know, I like to have fun.
Can you write a mom book next so I can learn every single thing about being a mom as cool as you?
You do not want my motherhood advice is sort of like how I grew up, like kind of let your kids do whatever, they're going to figure it out.
No, because you're like homeschooling them. Like you do so many, and you're so good at traditions.
I do love traditions. Hey, but you know what? Just to bring
it back
around, traditions are minimalism for me. Like traditions are deciding ahead of time what my favorite parts of a holiday are and taking out all of the fluff that I don't subscribe to, that I don't want to be part of my, you know, like I have definitely gone through and decided what things we do and what things we don't do, because there's a lot of things that people do around the holidays that they just do because they think they're supposed to, that they don't like, they feel a lot of pressure around, but they don't really want to. And so just deciding what we're going to do and having a couple like solid things that we do every year makes the holidays, all of them, so much easier because we just know what we're going to do. We can really enjoy that. And then everything else feels like wide open space for possibility.
Wow. Have you written about that before, that traditions?
I do have a podcast all about traditions, too, I think. And
okay.
I have a blog post that is family traditions through the year.
Oh,
and
man.
I go through every holiday and I tell you what our family does for
each
of them. throughout the year.
Okay. I'm so excited to read that. That's the mommy book I wanted you to write. You already wrote it. Oh my gosh. Yes. Awesome. Okay. Well, speaking of book, I always ask if there is a book besides your own that's really inspired you in an awesome way.
Oh my gosh. I have two. Can I share two?
Please. That's very not minimalist of you, but whatever.
Oh, I mean, if I had to say one, it would be Essentialism by Greg McKeown.
Very on brand. Yep.
Yes.
What's the other one?
The other one is The Gratitude Diaries by Janice Kaplan. Oh, also very on brand. Oh my gosh. That's one you'll want to buy probably, but read it from the library first. I've taken so many notes in it. I've read both of those books multiple times throughout the years, and I think that you'll read them and you'll be like, oh yeah, this is like kind of foundational ideas for what Miranda believes and lives now. Those are two books that changed my life.
Great. I found Essentialism maybe a little dry is the word. It just felt like more technical.
Oh, so technical. But like we were talking about earlier with the cerebral men who just
like Cal Newport of deep work. Yeah.
Like Cal Newport. Yeah. I feel like Greg McKeown is that way where he just kind of says it like it is. Like, what is the most important thing you can do? And how do you do that? And then don't worry about anything else.
Easy. Like, I mean, literally. Yeah. Here, it's like the guy at the happiness.
Totally. The funny thing is with both Cal Newport and Greg McKeown, Deep Work and Essentialism, as a woman, it was really interesting. I've read both of those and love those books, but it was interesting to say, well, that is kind of an easier perspective to take when you inherently, by virtue of the culture we live in, don't resume full responsibility for the household or the meals or the cleaning or the children. Like, it's so much easier to focus only on your highest priority value when you can without being encumbered by anything else, you know, or feeling like you need to share the roles in some of those other situations. And I'm not saying that those men don't, because I think that they do share the role of parenthood and of household manager and things like that. But I think that minimalism as a woman is so much more important, just inherently important to our beings because of our culture, for us to be able to say, it's a lot easier for a man to say, well, don't worry about the laundry today. Or, you don't need those extra shoes, you know, where we feel like we're responsible for everyone and everything and even like other people's ideas and other people's emotions. Like we want responsibility for everything, and learning to slowly carve away to where you get to your most important values and you can consciously eliminate the rest, I feel like it's even more important and even more powerful.
And likely we're the ones getting much more bombarded with Instagram ads.
100,000%.
Like, my husband doesn't follow influencers who's telling him that, like, if he buys this hat, he's going to be happier.
Totally.
You know, so yeah. We're a little...
We're way more wrapped up. Yeah. I mean, there's some statistic about that too. Women do like 80% of the world's shopping. I mean, just like,
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that it's important for us to tune in and focus on what matters to us and get really good at letting go of the rest.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have to ask you, what is your favorite plant to eat right now?
Oh, gosh, that's a good, can I say cacao?
Ooh, sure. Yeah. I didn't expect that.
Oh yeah. No, I love chocolate, and I love, I like it in its darkest, rarest, like cacao nibs even, blended up. Like,
them? Okay.
I usually blend them up with almond milk and frozen bananas to make like a little chocolate banana smoothie situation.
Yum.
I like drinking cacao, like even with water, like the way they would have in the 1700s, like,
wow, instead so you don't of mind it coffee. Super bitter.
I love it. I love it bitter.
That's so great, and it's so good for you.
Yeah, it's good. So that's I mean,
you. That's a plant.
Butternut
great.
Squash too, maybe.
Ooh, I love butternut squash.
And it's especially just like coming in again right now, where you're like, oh, it's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere all the time, but it's like really everywhere right now.
It's like genuinely everywhere now. Like genuinely it's supposed everywhere. To be everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm embracing it.
Okay, so where should everybody go to get less stuff, more adventure, and more Miranda.
Yes, and more Miranda. So my website is livefreecreative.co, and from there you can hop to my shop to get the book, you can hop onto the blog, you can read old blog posts. I have a free 5-day email course that's called 5 Days to Freedom. It's kind of a great like jump start into some of the work that I do. And on Instagram, I'm livefreemiranda. And I'm there every day and just hanging out and sharing things that feel uplifting and inspiring.
And you are incredibly uplifting and inspiring. And your podcast, Live Free Creative, is such a delight, as is your book, More Than Enough. So we have more than enough opportunities to get you in our lives. And for that, I am grateful, in addition to your time and wisdom today.
Thank you so much, Holly. This has been amazing. I love talking with you, and I just really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Well, I don't know if we answered the can adventure mindset be genetic question, but I hope it just proved that it can be podcast contagious. I love Miranda's perspective on life so much that the day this podcast drops, I will be arriving at a 4-day creative writing retreat with her and some other ladies, all of whom are currently strangers to me because adventure. All but whom, like myself, got COVID tested. I hope this chat is finding you COVID-free and mindful. And if you want a super recap of it, please visit the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/202. Also in the show notes, you'll find my interview on Miranda's lovely podcast, or you can go into your podcast app and type in Talia Pollock, Live Free Creative. Speaking of living free and creatively, I have to finish packing for the retreat, so plant party person out. Have a great week.